it doesn't work for everybody, and that's okay. And you got to be okay with that. And you got to be able to get up the next day and just keep moving forward. So, and that's like an athlete. You can win a game, lose a game. You still got to wake up the next day and get in the weight room, go practice on that field and work as hard as you can and give everything. That kind of bodes well with our industry.
Mike, thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Man, glad to be here, buddy.
So let me give you a little background with Mike. I've known Mike for a little over, probably close to 2 years now. Mike works at a place called Nallen Associates and works with a guy named Justin Kraft. Justin Kraft, former guest on here, and Justin and I played, didn't play together, but we played at UAB in crossing times. But Mike is a former college basketball star at Birmingham Southern and is now transitioned into life insurance / infinite banking is the main driver especially of what you do. Mm-hmm. So let's do this. Before we start, who are you and where are you from?
Sure. From Cincinnati, Ohio, originally.
I did not know that.
Yep. Ohio born, Midwestern.
Okay.
Born and raised up there, whole family. Primarily, it's still in that area, mostly. Got down here on, like you mentioned, at Birmingham Southern on a basketball scholarship, very luckily. But got a finance degree from Birmingham Southern.
Okay.
Thought I was going to go directly into that finance world, but had a little bit of an entrepreneurial heart right out of college and had a great partner friend that we went into business together right out of school, pretty much.
What did you do?
Had a sales career for about a year, year and a half, but then he went to work just by circumstance to lose some weight, actually, with a moving company here in town. And that's a great way to lose weight, by the way.
Yeah.
And so he did that for a summer. The owner of that business said, man, you need to do this. You need to give this a try. We're a franchise. Check it out. And we went down that road and he brought me in. So we went down that road, never got to the franchise level. And we decided just to do it on our own. We didn't want to be under control or give 7% of our revenue to somebody else. So we decided we're just going to do this thing from scratch. And we did. So funny story, we didn't pay ourselves for about 9 months. Worked at a local, we were delivery guys at night for a company here in town called Stakeout.
Yeah.
And we didn't pay ourselves, worked every day. Sometimes you got off at noon. Sometimes you got off at six. Sometimes, but whatever time we got off, the owner of Stakeout was really generous to us and said, just come on and just, you know, start delivering.
Wow.
And so we'd move during the day, deliver at night.
Spend a lot of time in a car.
Spent a lot of time in a car. And then when there was off days, we would go what we call drive for dollars and look for sale signs or people moving. And we'd go knock on a door and tell them who we were. And we grew it from there. So went well, did great, enjoyed it. But we learned really quickly that the business cycle of the moving world was cyclical. Six months, you make all your money. The rest of the 6 months, you hang on for dear life.
Because of the winter?
Yeah, the winter months. Nobody really moves during the summer. You know, everybody moves during the summer. Nobody's moving during school. And it just slows down. It's still active, but it's slower. And so we needed to change that model. And we got lucky and we started going to some mom and pop companies here in town and started delivering furniture for those mom and pops. We designed a business model that was more efficient for them and it made sense. They hired us. We delivered the what we call final mile delivery.
Yeah.
And then by God's grace, we received a phone call one day from a corporate member that was we thought was for one furniture company to deliver their furniture. We agreed to a deal. Their furniture started coming from California. We serviced them to death. And little did we know that that gentleman that called us managed Restoration Hardware, Pottery Barn, Ethan Allen, all of them. And next thing we know, we went from a 8,000 square foot warehouse to about a 150,000 square foot warehouse.
Oh my gosh.
And we had 15 trucks and 60 some employees and it was a career. And we went from 90% moving, 10% delivery to probably 75% delivery, 25% moving. That was our business model moving forward. Profit margins were slimmer. But it was consistent.
Consistent.
And
money.
That's what we liked about it. The cash flow was consistent.
So growing up, obviously sports was big in your life.
Yeah.
At some point in every kid's life, someone older looks at them and go, hey, Mike, what do you want to be when you grow up? What did you say?
Whew, that's a great question. I knew I had a pretty good understanding that I wanted to be in sales at some point.
Even as a kid, though, because that's not like, well, that's like, I here, don't, that's, here, I'm calling BS on that.
And here's why.
What 15-year-old kid wants to be in sales?
That's right. I didn't know what sales, but here's why I say that. So I come from, my parents divorced when I was four, didn't really know what that was like. So it never bothered me. I'm not jaded by that in my life. It was actually a blessing. My parents stayed and remained great friends. They were wonderful parents. I had two sets of parents because they both remarried eventually. But my mother, she didn't have a college degree. She might have put that on a resume, but mm-hmm. she didn't have a college degree. Got a job with MCI, if you remember MCI.
I do.
Yep. And she was a national sales manager for MCI. She had a huge role with MCI my entire career. And it wasn't because she was just the most charismatic. Everybody in the room knew who she was.
Was she attractive?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, where do you think I get these good looks?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. Hello.
Hello. That was a silly question. Yeah. But yeah, no, she could attract attention more than anything. She was a great speaker and just a good person. And I saw all the benefits that job gave her. She went on these amazing trips and she got to go, she hung out with the Bengals in Cincinnati and the Reds players and the different, you know, it opened up doors for her and she was able to do some really amazing things. I saw that as a young kid and it sparked my interest in that world. I didn't know what kind of sales was, but then my father, on the other hand, was a real estate investor, entrepreneur, owned his own real estate firm. But then there was a weird occurrence. We had a big tornado when I was young and it took away that business, believe it or not. It's way before computers. So he shifted and he went into the golf world and started developing homes with a guy that owned a country club and then sold those homes and then managed that country club. And then he saw an opportunity when I was in my early teens to buy a driving range, a golf driving range. My father was a big golfer and he got his PGA Tour card so he could teach lessons and own that driving range simultaneously. So
$5 a bucket.
You know it, buddy. And all day long, I was down there shagging balls. And that was my job, cutting grass, shagging balls, and washing golf balls. That's what I did my entire teenage career for him. But I saw what it was like to be a business owner. And so I really enjoyed that side. So those two personas got into my soul. And I saw, hey, entrepreneur is pretty cool. Sales is pretty cool. So I did know at a young age that's where I wanted to go. That's where it directed me.
So you go to play basketball, you go to the moving thing. Where did you transition from the moving company? Yeah.
So the moving company, I thought it was going to be a forever thing. I thought we had a great gig going on, but I did notice I've got two daughters. One's 20, one's 17 now. And, my wife's an absolute saint. Luckily, she worked in the school system, so her schedule matched up with the girls because I left at 5:30 a.m. and I got home at 6:30 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Tough life, right? Wow. You do a lot of speaking on family. I wasn't around. And it's not that I didn't want to be.
You were the main provider.
Sure. And so I knew, and my partner knew, my business partner knew it was time. We needed to focus more on family life. And I was a client of Nallen Wealth Management. I was a client first. So they taught me this strategy that we're going to talk about some today called infinite banking about 14 years ago, 15 years ago. I was blessed enough to go to a seminar, 8-hour seminar with the Nelson Nash, the creator of infinite banking. And I heard about this strategy and I dipped my toe in the water. I started using the strategy for my own personal family. Our wealth creation, our savings dollars went into that. And then quickly we discovered we need to use this for our business. We need to use this for our moving company, bought our equipment, bought our inventory, the different things we needed to do with money. That's where our money resided, was inside. And it also served for the insurance portion of what we're talking about, the cross-purchase agreement. So if something happened to my partner, the insurance company would pay me and I'd pay out his wife and I would own the company outright. Mm. That was kind of the agreement. But so that's the insurance component of it. But the vehicle was just a place where we held cash for business purchases, different things. So it solved multiple needs for us.
When did you decide to get out of the moving company? How old were your kids?
My daughter, that was 2011. So about 8 years ago. So about 12 and 9. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Somewhere in that age.
So Nallen is a wealth management company. Mm-hmm. But you're not a financial planner?
I'm not. I'm not a securities-driven financial planner. I don't do a lot of the market analysis and all that stuff. I believe in more of, I like to show clients where they're going to be in 5, 10, 15 years, not hopefully, but consistently and even guaranteed in some sense.
Why did you not decide? Okay, so two-part question. Let's answer the first part first. Why not be a financial planner and do insurance and I say sell IBC. Yeah. Why not be a financial planner and sell IBC? Why not do both?
It's a great question. Personally, I enjoy being a specialist. I like this world. It's a comfortable lane I get to control and I get to know and educate my clients on. I don't get to sell anything, to be honest. I mean, it is a sale at the end of the day, but I educate clients. I give them the roadmap. If they want to go down that road, we're going to go with them. And it's a relationship that we build. It's not transactional. A lot of folks in our industry, it's a sale. It's a transaction. Here's your policy. Here's your account. Good luck. Here's a 1-800 number if you need anything. Mm-hmm. We like to partner with our clients. We like to walk the road with them. But getting them down that road, that's what I want to specialize in, is teaching that. It's how I got here. It's what I want to share. I just want to be kind of, I read a book, the Go Giver, early in my career. It's one of the best books. I highly recommend it, by Bob Berg. It taught me what I wanted to do. And because I almost went down that road. I almost got securities licensed. And a weird transition happened a few years back called COVID, and it refocused me. Actually, it was a blessing. Not many good things came from COVID, but that was one of them. And when I saw that, I said, "Hey, I've got to stick with what I know. I don't love that world." It affected me, and that's where I got into the infinite banking world. I did the traditional financial planning. That's what I was taught in college. I knew what it was about. And I went that road. I had a SEP IRA. I had brokerage accounts. I had those different investment accounts. And if you remember about 2008, what happened in the market, I put all this money in for 10 years, got up to here, and it went right back to square one. And I looked and I said, well, that's all the money I put in. I've got no growth there. I just gave up 10 years of growth. This doesn't feel right to me.
Sure.
And so, there's nothing wrong with investing, obviously, right? There's some great, but you have to know what that is. That's investing. What we focus on, and what I focus on for my clients, is the savings component of our dollars. Where does the savings dollars reside, and how can we be most efficient with those? So that's,
give me the 40-second definition of infinite banking. Go.
It's a savings vehicle with the characteristics you would want in a privatized banking system. So you have the control of your capital. You have the safety and guarantee of a savings vehicle. It's guaranteed because it's based on the actuarial data, your age, your health. Mm-hmm. And then what I really love about it is it's a contract. It's not a policy. It's a contract between you and whatever insurance carrier we decide to go with. If I put in X, Y, and Z have to occur. Y is the cash value. Z would be the death benefit. If I provide this deposit, they have to do what contractually it says. So the 40-second answer, it's a savings account that provides me liquidity, guarantees, tax advantages. It's tax-free when
proper. Tax-free growth.
When you structure it properly. Yep. And that working with the right coach on how to do that. And then one of the biggest things is we talked about the uninterrupted compounding of our dollar. When I utilize the money, I'm not removing it from its earnings potential. I'm leveraging it. Very similar to a HELOC. We've talked about that before. If you own your home, you have a value of your home. You have equity in that home. That would be the cash value of a policy. Very similar. When you borrow against a HELOC, value of your home is still hopefully appreciating, correct? In this sense, the cash value of the policy never gets interrupted, even when we use it to buy cars, invest in things, whatever, pay off debts. Whatever you want to do with that money, your money's still earning.
Why does Dave Ramsey hate whole life insurance?
Traditionally designed whole life insurance is a bad place to park money. Mm. And he's right in most sense. What Dave hasn't dug into but it doesn't benefit him, I should say. Dave has his sector of the 12% mutual funds and the avoid life insurance, buy term, invest the difference. It's a great strategy for his clientele that he's
sure.
Yeah. But for the savvy entrepreneur, the business owner, the you and me level individual that just wants to get out of the rat race, there's another way to utilize life insurance as an asset, not an expense. So Dave's talking about the expense of life insurance, and I get it. They're high commissions. They takes too long to grow. What we do properly structured, go back to that term, when we structure the policy for cash accumulation and not death benefits, stay within some IRS limits, the policy works and is more efficient than what he's referring to.
So I'm going to transition a little bit. So the place you work now in Associates has a lot of college athletes that work there. Yeah. Justin Kraft, who's the president of that place, played football at UAB and great friend of both of ours. Why does being a college athlete make you better at your job than others?
Sure. We have unbelievable, and you've been there, you've seen it. We've had unbelievable culture, and that's something we will never compromise at Nallen. We hire very slow, but it has. There's quite a few athletes in the room, and I think that just comes down to the obstacles that an athlete has to face. It's not easy. Everybody thinks, well, I'm just God-given talent. Well, yeah, that gets you so far. But there's a lot of failures. Yeah. There's a lot of ups and downs. There's a lot of turbulence through a college career. Things can shift and pivot. And I think that just folds really well inside of a wealth management or even a specialist like me, because you get told no a lot. Yeah. It doesn't work for everybody, and that's okay. And you got to be okay with that. And you got to be able to get up the next day and just keep moving forward. So, and that's like an athlete. You can win a game, lose a game. You still got to wake up the next day and get in the weight room, go practice on that field and work as hard as you can and give everything. That kind of bodes well with our industry.
One of the things that has faded so much in the last 10 or 15 years is a thing called delayed gratification. And all athletes at some point have to experience delayed gratification. Yep. Exercise, lifting weights, practice. Mm-hmm. The amount of delayed gratification that goes into being a athlete and being a college athlete, it's
every level you go, it gets multiplied.
Yeah. Yep. But having the delayed gratification and knowing that I don't have to see a result today for my labor today, mm-hmm. it's hard.
It's really tough.
Because people want to put in today sure. and get out today, or put in today and get out tomorrow. And it's not the case.
They need everything instant.
They do.
It goes with the career that we have chosen, but it also goes with the products that we do. You know, it's not a get rich quick scheme. This is a get rich slow scheme.
It is.
And it requires collaboration, mm-hmm. Not only on us to manage and help and coach, but also on the client or the owner of that policy to utilize that money, be efficient with it, know how to be an honest banker, as we call it. You know, if we're going to use savings dollars in our lives, when we use that money, there's a cost. Everything has a cost. There's no way around that. And that's one of the things Dave misses. We talk, mm-hmm. and I don't want to pick on Dave. He's very good. But when we utilize cash, you don't see it on a statement show up every month that there's a cost for using that cash, but we have the ability to show a client, hey, there was an opportunity cost. Yeah. It's not an interest cost. It's not a calculation you can see, but it's something. But with every dollar that we spend, if we're a good banker, an honest banker, there's some practices that we teach called economic value add, EVA. It's a whole nother podcast if we want to go down that rabbit hole. But it's something that we teach and we show clients, if you're a good steward to your money, this money is going to work and be more efficient than any other vehicle you've used for your savings dollars.
Justin Kraft sat me down and he said, this is a great tool if you use it. And he looked at me in the eyes. He said, hey, if you're just going to store money in an infinite banking account, don't do it. Yeah. It is money that you put in a storehouse that you have to use. Yeah. So I'm going to give my version of this concept is, you put money, you buy a small amount of life insurance and you put more money in that gives you cash value. Mm-hmm. So I've got a death benefit over here, but I'm also building cash value. So I'm putting dollars in that go into this policy.
Yeah.
I can then borrow that money off of that policy. Correct. There's a small fee, but the fee is contracted. So it's a very consistent fee. Mm-hmm. Mine, for example, is 4%. Some people's might be a little less, maybe a little bit more, but it's right around that number.
Yep.
So I borrow at a 4% rate. I can't borrow at a 4% rate at a bank right now as we sit today. Yep. It's 8 or 9 right now.
That's right.
So I borrow from that money. I take that money and then I go use it for whatever. Real estate, business, a number of things. We could get into a whole 2-hour episode on just the ways you can use it.
Sure.
But I make money twice. I heard a girl say this. Yeah. When your money goes out, make sure it brings back friends. Mm-hmm. And so we take the money, we borrow the money from the policy. We use it. That money then makes more money. Mm-hmm. We then pay our policy back and we have an excess.
Yeah.
All the time, my policy is growing at a 4% rate. But then there's also a dividend on the back end.
That's right.
So we're growing in multiple ways. So it's growing over here, but then it's growing over there. Yeah. Money is a tool. I relate to this all the time. Money's like a gun. Mm-hmm. A gun can be used for evil. Mm-hmm. A gun can be used to kill somebody, but a gun can also be used to kill somebody that's trying to hurt your family.
Sure.
A gun can be used to be heinous and do different things they should, but a gun can also provide food for your family. Mm-hmm. Money's the same way. You can use money in a negative way. But you can use money in a really life-giving, wonderful, creative, fun way.
Well said. And I would say another added, I look at it as a distribution center. Go back to my moving days. We had furniture come in. It went into that distribution center. Mm-hmm. Dollars go in.
Yeah.
Well, those dollars don't do anything when they're sitting in the warehouse.
Yeah.
I've got to get that furniture out. I've got to get that's how I create money with that inventory that's sitting in my warehouse.
Yeah.
I got to get it out there and put it to work. And then it returns a higher rate of return. Second analogy I would give you is we call it becoming your own bank. If you owned a bank, Thomas, and you charged 8% when you took money from your bank, mm-hmm. Would you go down the road and use somebody else's bank that charges four? Well, certainly not. Mm-hmm. You'd use your own bank because sure. No matter the interest cost.
It's mine.
It's coming back to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so creating your own system, your own banking model. Banking is a great business to be in, by the way. We want to participate in that business model.
Yeah.
We just want to do it on the you and me level, not at the commercial level.
Well, the banking business in general is a wonderful, wonderful business. Mm-hmm. Those guys get rich slow.
They know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing. They give money out. They generate these returns, and they're just slow drip returns back in. So we've talked about IBC, infinite banking concept. We've talked about IBC, and the whole key behind IBC is using the paid up additions in the policy, using those. So one of the questions I have is, what is the best and most creative way you've seen someone use an IBC policy?
I think when you get creative, it's usually in the business sector. And so I'll give you two quick examples. First one was a tree company. They sold pulp, and they used all the pulp, the paper and everything. And they sold, well, a younger mid-management or higher management person was going to buy out the owner. And so he came to us. We talked about infinite banking. He said, hey, we looked at his snapshot financially, and we saw that about $10,000 a month was going out to pay off this owner. And he had about 7 to 8 more years to go on that plan before he bought out the owner. So okay. that's dollars going out. Well, he also had a large pool of capital that he was able to reserve, because now he was technically the owner and more money was coming in. So we created a system that would allow those dollars to flow through his system. Money came in from the business that he had to warehouse somewhere. Now, every month when that $10,000 goes out, we took a policy loan, allowed that $10,000 still getting paid the same way. And over time, let's call it 10 years and $1.2 million went out and flowed to the owner for the purchase of that business. The purchase is done. And what would he have done at that point? Now he's got $10,000 in his control, and he could start saving that money 10 years from now. Well, what we did is we started saving today. We started moving that money, passing it through a policy, creating protection for the business, creating protection for his family, but also having a warehouse where money flowed through, paid off the owner, same cash flows, didn't change his habits, didn't have to work any harder, didn't take any more risk, didn't pay any more taxes. But now we've got 8 years of compounding working in his favor when he gets to that finish line and pays off that owner. Now he's got not only the $10,000 of freed up capital every month, but he's also got $800,000-$900,000 of growth that he is now compounding on tax-free for the rest of his life. It's a big difference.
So he took, let me unpack this. Mm-hmm. So he had to pay this owner off over the course of 10 years.
Yep. We caught him in about mid-year, 1.5, year two.
And the payment was 10 grand a month. Mm-hmm. So just say 120 grand a year. Yep. So instead of paying the guy cash out, I guess that's $1.2 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of paying the guy cash $1.2 million over the course of 10 years, he took the $10,000, redirected it into a policy.
Mm-hmm.
He put the money in the policy. He then immediately-ish took the money back out and gave it to the owner.
Yep.
And he just rotated. The $10,000 he was going to pay him, he put in the policy, took out. Yep. Put in the policy, took out. Put in the policy, took out.
And actually what we're doing is, not to get too deep in the weeds, he had a large pool of capital, a couple $100,000. We actually started with that lump sum. The owner was perfectly fine. Instead of you paying me monthly, I'll just go ahead and take a lump sum at the beginning of the year, one-time shot. Now that $10,000 goes where?
Back to him.
Back to his policy every month.
Yep. So instead, at the end of 10 years, mm-hmm. him being out $1.2 million, he's paid the guy $1.2 million. Mm-hmm. But then in his policy, he has a value of?
We didn't start at year one. So we're about in year four of this plan right now. By the end of year eight, when he's completely paid off, he's going to have close to $1 million in there of growth and money that's flown through there. So, yeah. So he's compounding on $1 million versus starting at zero and now starting to go. It's a big difference.
That's unreal.
Yeah.
All because you'd redirected the money, made a pit stop.
That's right.
Give me another example of a creative way that you've seen someone use an IBC policy.
Real estate is primarily the number one reason we see creative financing, creative ways to do business. You know, whether it's a fix and flip, whether it's a rehab and or a buy and hold, even syndication deals.
Yeah.
You know, syndication deals. So money has to reside somewhere. Money has to come from somewhere. If you're going to use capital to purchase a building, down payment, whatever it may be, rehab, construction cost, whatever that may be, that money has to come from somewhere. So that is one of the most creative ways we always see because we want that money to go to work and put it in a place that's going to provide either a quick capital return on a fix and flip or passive income or cash flows that's going to redirect back to that person. Give you one more. Real estate covers everything, right? There's so many. I live in that world. I work with a lot of real estate investors. So that's kind of what comes to mind right out of the gate. But I will give you another one. Construction company had bought big pieces of equipment. I mean, $100,000 pieces of equipment every year. Usually, you know, on a 2 year, 3 year cycle or lease that they were doing, but they were owners of those pieces of equipment and depreciate and all that fun stuff. Didn't want to change their business model, whatever. We just looked at the cash flows. And this particular company had three key executives, had a CFO, CEO, and a COO that were going to run and take over this business for the owner one day. He wanted to protect his asset of those three key employees. They basically ran the business. So he came to us with a key employee mindset. Yeah.
Key man policy.
Yep. And so we're going to protect that. But then we got a little deeper and we said, well, let's solve for that. Let's check that box. But also, what are you doing with your capital? What if we constructed this policy? That was typically going to be a term policy. Most key man policies, term coverage, cheap, inexpensive, solves for the death benefit. That's all we're solving for. We talked to him and brought him down the infinite banking road and said, what if we can do the same thing death benefit wise, but we can construct a policy for cash accumulation and you can start financing those pieces of equipment that you own, you control, and now you get the interest on those dollars versus the commercial bank that was going to lend you the money to do
that. So instead of going to local bank and say, hey, I need $100,000 to go buy this earth mover, they started a policy
on each of the key men.
And they said, we're going to fund these policies, and we're going to borrow money from these policies to buy the earth mover.
Correct.
And then on the payments, quote, payment, I'm going to pay myself back. Mm-hmm. So Nelson talks about all the time being an owner. Mm-hmm. And he talks about being an owner, but also being your own bank. Mm-hmm. And I think that the thing that I have learned the most, Mike, from you and Justin, is ownership always comes at a cost. And you got to pay to get to be an owner.
Sure.
But again, we go back to delayed gratification. Me paying for an IBC policy and all these things, it has done nothing but open my eyes up to see that, you know what? By the time my kids are grown, we could probably operate without a bank.
Yeah.
And that's a very freeing thing.
It's a comfortable thing.
And I'll tell you an example of how and why this is great. I got a buddy that flips houses and he comes to me and says, I need some money to flip this house. I give him $100,000. He goes, he buys the home, he flips the home. I am the mortgage on the house. So if he defaults, I own the house because it's the mortgage, it's the Bank of Thomas.
You're in first position.
I'm in first position. Mm. So he buys the house. I take money out of my policy. I give him the $100,000. In 6 months, he gives me, let's just call it 15% simple interest.
Right.
Okay. In 6 months, he gives me 15%. In 6 months, he writes me a check for $115,000. Mm-hmm. That cost me not 4%, but it cost me 2% because it was only 6 months.
That's right.
So I spent $2,000 using my money. He gives me $15,000. So I've netted $13,000 and all I did was loan him that for 6 months.
That's right.
I'm the bank.
All the while,
it keeps growing.
Your $100,000 or plus, what's in that policy,
keeps growing.
Continued to compound and never got interrupted.
But here, I think, is the kicker. What makes it so attractive is he didn't have to go through underwriting. He didn't have to get a blood sample for the bank. And he hadn't have to go through all of his
personal finances.
Yep. He sends me a message and says, this is what I need. Now, obviously, I built a relationship with him. He's built a relationship with me.
Yeah, there's trust there.
But like, there is so much value in this guy sending me a text and saying, I got a house at this property. Mm-hmm. This is how much I need. This is when I'll have it back. It's freeing. It's freeing for him, but it's also just like, great. Yeah. It gives me a chance to pull my money out and my money's going to come back and it's going to bring friends.
Yeah, it doesn't. Exactly. I love that statement. Yeah. Yep. It's gratifying. Real estate, you got to have speed. You got to have speed to the deal. Usually you can get there quicker when you have that speed. It gives them that ability to have money in their pocket or in their account within 3 to 5 business days. It's pretty quick. Give you a quick example on that. A veterinarian client of mine has been wanting to buy a piece of property right next to his clinic to expand his business. It came on the market and instantly, it's great, great location, unbelievable location. Institutional buyers wanted to put money down. I mean, they're throwing big dollars at this realtor and they're fine. The vet was a good tenant, a good person. He built a little bit of a relationship with the owner trying to buy this property over the last 10 years. Mm. No joke. When it finally hit the market, this guy's getting flooded with calls, this owner. The veterinarian went to him and said, I can have you check in 3 to 5 business days. I'll pay cash for this. Because he'd been a client of mine for almost a decade now. And the guy said, hey, it was a lesser dollar figure than what he was getting offered, but he didn't have to go through the rigmarole of dealing with, you know, all the...
He knew the HVAC. He didn't have to put together a pro forma. He didn't have to put together all this stuff. He knew he'd been in there 10 years.
And the blessing is now this vet owns that property. They're already clearing the land, and they're going to develop, and they're going to expand their business. That return, that instant gratification, is going to take a while. But to get that deal done, if he did not, and he's coming on our podcast soon to discuss this very topic, if he did not have that policy, he wouldn't have got that deal done.
Internal rate of return, IRR, is the most non-talked about stat out there when it comes to finances.
Sure.
People don't understand it really because they, what's the rate? Well, the IRR is a formula of how much is your money made over time.
That's right.
So in essence, my money made 15%, but my money really annualized really made 30%. So my RRR on that deal I talked about was 30%. 30%, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
30% return.
And I would even almost, it might be better than that because the pennies you paid for the use of your own money to the insurance company, you get a return of some of that back in the dividend, taxes. Number one.
And then taxes on the back end.
And the taxes on the back end are you're never going to have to pay. Wow. You'll never get a 1099.
Never get a 1099 for an IBC policy.
That's a good deal.
What's the most common reason someone starts an IBC policy?
Initially, just like myself, initially it's right out of the gates of the emergency fund. It's a safe place to park their capital. That's what we see 8 out of 10 times. But with most cases, just like this veterinarian, that's what he started with. It becomes and it evolves, and we create new methods to use this, whether it's in business, whether it's in investing. As you know, I own 7 of these policies. Wow. I started with one, and then I didn't have a need for more insurance in life. I had a need to park capital somewhere. So I started the second policy and a third, and I've got 2 of my wife and 2 of my daughters. Can't wait for that day to sit my daughters down. They know what they have somewhat, but they don't know how it functions quite yet. They're going to sit down soon, probably in the next 4 to 5 years, and learn what we've created for them. We started this almost 12 years ago for each of them.
Yeah.
And we, you know, much smaller. Doesn't have to be the size policy that my wife and I started, but it starts small. You want to talk about compounding. I mean, you start on a 7-year-old and you go 60 years down the road. That's a good runway.
Teaching our kids, there's two topics that people our age, their parents didn't talk about. Number one is money. Number two, sex. We'll talk about sex later.
We'll do that.
But number one, the money issue was not talked about.
Mm-mm.
And I can't tell you how I've flipped the script on that with my kids. Yeah. We talk about money all the time. I hate the term, I can't afford that.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, how can we afford it? Yeah. Number one.
How do we get there?
And then also teaching them the proper management of that.
Mm-hmm.
We have a method by which we teach our kids. Give 10% to Jesus off the top. He gets the first.
Yep.
We invest 20%. We save 20%. And then we live off 50.
Fantastic.
We are teaching them that now. Now, will they be able to sustain that forever? I don't know. But right now, that's what we're rolling with. And it's good. Now, we're also diversified. Okay. Let me just be super clear. IBC is not like the way that runs our world.
No.
It's just, as Justin likes to say, it's a leg of the stool.
Yeah.
We still dollar cost average in the market.
Good.
I'm a huge believer in that, but it's very consistent. Just like we have IBC that we put dollars into every month or every year.
I have investment accounts. I have,
yes.
I have retirement accounts, 401k, brokerage accounts. I have those things. Those are investing dollars.
Yeah.
That's different.
Totally different.
Savings dollars. Whereas that's, and now with my savings dollars, that is now would you agree, Thomas, that everything you invest in has to come from excess savings? Once you build up excess savings, that dollar then can go into real estate, go into the market, go into your business, whatever it means. Without that excess savings, we can't really put that money to work somewhere else. We got to keep it safe. It's our emergency fund. It's the dollars that we can't afford to take risk with.
Right.
But once that bucket gets a little full, now we've got some opportunities. And when those opportunities come along, those that have the gold can take care of it.
I heard a guy the other day said, hey, I want to get with you on how to do something passive. I want to get some passive income.
It's what everybody wants.
Everybody wants it. But here's the thing about passive income that people don't understand. They think that you flip a switch and you start making money.
Yeah.
You have to have excess active income
yeah.
in order to make passive income.
Yeah.
You cannot take the money you were going to pay for your light bill and put it in something and generate just automatic more dollars. It doesn't work that way. You have to create excess. Once you create excess, you can then take the excess and then have your money work for you.
Sure.
So there's got to be a reduction in spending if you don't make a lot of money. There's got to be a reduction in spending in order to create the excess. Now, do you need a lot of money to do that? No, but you have to be disciplined and dogmatic with what you're spending. Yeah. And people say, well, I don't buy a fancy car and I don't buy fancy clothes. You know what, though? My sister $8 herself to death. Mm-hmm. She went to the gas station every morning. She got a bottle of water. She got Starbucks. She got a candy bar. She got a pack of cigarettes. She got a whatever. And my mom, after about 6 months, she just looked at it and she said, you're $7 and $8 yourself to death. You don't have a nice car. Yep. You don't buy fancy clothes. You don't take extravagant trips. But you're spending, she was spending between $7 and $14 a day on just stuff. That's fine if you make $400,000 a year.
But if you took half of that on a daily basis and put it somewhere more strategic, think of the outcome.
Think of the outcome. Effect.
Yeah.
So fill in the blank.
And that's what we do for a lot of our clients back up. That's part of our process is we look at the outflows. Mm-hmm. Where's money going in our life? Is it going over here to debts? And you talked about IRR. It's a big part that we want to teach our card. But I would also say the volume of interest is what matters more than the rate of interest.
Sure.
If you're making 8% on 10,000 and I'm making 4% on 100,000, I'm winning, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm working off of bigger volume. And that's what we want to do for our clients. Where are dollars going out in their life? Expenses, debts, monthly cash flows, wherever those dollars are going. What if we could recapture 35, 40, 50% of those dollars and redirect them back to your system, your net worth would naturally just grow. And that's what we try to show, that vehicle of infinite banking. It's a product stripped down, but it's the process is what matters. And we preach that all day long. And that's what we do. And I go back, there was one other good thing that came out of COVID, if you don't mind me steering the conversation, is we had an awakening at that point that social media had a real presence. There, a lot of people get their information from there. We were belly to belly, meet you in a conference room, shake your hand, get to know you, and educate one-on-one. We're using other social media tools to teach what we are teaching on a daily basis. So we finally did sit down, myself and four co-founders, we did exactly what you're doing here. And we created a podcast, a platform, a website, video series, blogs, frequently asked questions. All those things are in one place. It is giving the information away from free. It is not a click funnel. We are just educating. And we had a platform now that people can go to, learn about IBC, consume it, whichever medium they want, and find the information they need. Hopefully that educates them, brings them up to speed. And then if they do want to work with us, great. We're here to provide that.
What's the name of that podcast?
The podcast is called Save Yourself.
Okay.
It's brought to you. It's Unlimited Wealth is the platform, unlimitedwealth.com we use as the educational platform. It's not separate. It's an infinite banking division of Nalan Wealth Management, so to speak. So Nalan Wealth Management is a full comprehensive wealth management firm, all things wealth management. Infinite banking primarily. The educational resource is the Unlimited Wealth and the Save Yourself podcast.
So talking about educating, what's the first step in teaching your kids about IBC?
Discipline, understanding that there's money has to go somewhere every month. You know, as in your example, the 10, 20, and 10%, same type of thing. We have to start with the discipline, show them that it takes something. You have to give up something to get something. And then the utilization of it. Explain to them, hey, you want to go on that vacation. Where's that money going to come from? You're going to put it on a credit card. Mm. You got to pay off that credit card. There's interest involved in that. You're going to pay cash. There's a cost for that too.
Sure.
There's a third way. What if we could borrow from our own system, borrow against that money, pay that money back to yourself and allow your money to compound?
That's good.
We have calculators that can physically show the numbers, but if they don't get the concept, the numbers don't matter. We say that all the time. If you want to see the numbers, you got to know the concept. But if you know the concept, the numbers don't matter because the concept makes sense.
What if we started out by teaching our kids about banking first? I think about this because I've got policies on all three kids.
It's a great idea.
Let's teach them about how the Bryant Bank works. Mm-hmm. Like we're great friends with Jeremy Tuggle, who helps run all the branches, Bryant Banks in Birmingham. Teaching them about banking first and about how they make little percentages off of lots of dollars, mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. And then transitioning that and say, what if we did that?
Yeah.
I think that's one of the methods that I'm going to start doing this with.
And that it's the process. The banking function in our lives is a real thing. So yeah, I think that's a great idea. Teach them the banking model, how they, if I walked into a bank today and deposited $10,000, they're waiting for you to walk in a minute later and borrow that $10,000. They're going to provide me 0.5% interest for my deposit. By the way, that's a liability on the bank's books.
Yeah.
My deposit is.
So they got to get it out of there.
You walk in the door and you take a loan, they're going to charge you 5%. And actually with fractional reserve lending, they can loan you 10 times what I've deposited. That. We won't go there.
Yeah.
But now they're going to charge you 5% and you're an asset on their books. You're income for them. And then when your money comes in, what do they do with that? They send it out again. I mean, the Swiss banking model is turn a dollar 6 times. That's their model. So if we teach that to our children early on, we can't capture all of that and we can't fractionally lend, but we are in control. We have that's the biggest thing for me. And that was another reality that came in businesses shut down, incomes dried up. And when those life occurrences, when Murphy shows up at your door, you have to be able to pivot and have control. Infinite Banking can provide that.
So there are a lot of people out there that sell cars that are wonderful people that they do want to do a good, honest job. But there are a lot of people out there that sell cars that are crooked and there are a lot of people out there.
Same thing in the insurance world.
So here's my question.
Yeah.
What do people need to look out for when someone is selling an IBC policy?
Over sensationalize, stop what you're doing in the investment world. Take all your money and put it in here. No, as you mentioned, it's a leg on the stool. It's a piece of your financial picture. We don't want to change people's overall. It's a piece that we use to store our safe dollars. As Justin recommended to you and I recommend to my clients, not every dollar needs to go into this thing. So that's the first warning sign. If you hear somebody screaming, give me all your money and put it all in here, this is going to be the end all be all, run.
It's not true.
Yeah, it's not true. The second part is the product. They're just like a car salesman and just like the insurance salesman that are out there. There's different products that you can use. And there's a lot that give the insurance companies a bad name because there's only so many products. The majority of them put the risk on the insured. There's one whole life insurance that puts the risk on the insurance company. Mm. The risk is on them. You're not betting against the insurance company. You're partnering with them. Yep. And so we use whole life. That's our primary. And then it's just a design feature. How do we design that whole life product? What carriers provide the highest cash value, the most guaranteed return, a good solid dividend, low rate of interest that they charge for the loans. So we get to pick and choose carriers, but they all play by the same rules primarily. But to answer your question, what to avoid, watch out for those products that look really good on paper. The illustration looks phenomenal. I can't compete with some of the illustrations out there to show side-by-side comparisons. But what this one doesn't show is when there's a blip in the radar, the market index is down. Those are usually related to indexes in the market. When that market rate's down and it doesn't hit that 6 or 7 or 8% projection that's on paper, that whole rest of that illustration you're looking at is going to change. But they don't show you that on the front end.
When you're buying an IBC policy, there are fees on the front end. Mm-hmm. So if I put in $100,000, my cash value is probably going to be, let's just use a round number. Yeah. $70,000. Mm-hmm. There's a $30,000 cost there. Mm-hmm. When someone sits there, well, how do you combat? Hey, I think it's a great concept, but I can't get past the huge upfront fees. What do you say?
Yeah, it's the biggest instant gratification, number one. But go back to that. There's a cost to get into the banking business. We want you to run, Thomas Cox, whatever you do for a living, that's going to be your primary. But then we're also getting in the banking business. There's a cost to get that banking business started because there's a lot of risk on that insurance company. Something happened to you that first, second, third.
You're out a lot of money.
Your family's upset, but they're also taken care of.
Sure.
There's a lot of risk there. So there's a cost to get into that product of insurance. But what we do, as you know, is we front load those costs are all pushed to that first year.
Yeah.
After year two, year three, year four, you're dollar for dollar.
Yeah.
And then a magical thing happens around year 5 and 6, the policy becomes what's called leveraged.
Yeah.
And if you're just looking at it on a cash basis, you've seen your illustration. When you put in 20,000, and I'm not using your numbers, but you put in 20,000 and the next day, you've got
24.
30. Yeah, it's 24 or 25 or 20. In every year, that's the worst year it's going to be. The next year it's going to be better.
Growing.
Not hopefully, not maybe, but contractually.
Yeah. Fill in the blank. You need blank $400 of excess income in order to do an IBC policy?
Quick answer, $400 to $500, I would say, would be a good starting
a
point.
Month.
There's not a minimum.
Yeah.
Let's say that. There's not a minimum, but we want to make it relevant. We want to make it to where a client can utilize it, feel it. You know, if you put $100 in there a month, you're not going to feel it for 8 years, 10 years before you can even start using the policy. So I would say twofold to that. About $400 to $500 of excess money a month would be a good starting place, and about $10,000 to $12,000 of reserve liquid capital in some form or fashion that we can utilize to overfund. Remember, there's that over the capitalization period, the first 4 to 5 years of the policy. We want to overfund as much as possible for those first 4 to 5 years.
Right.
Compounding works better when you got a bigger volume, right?
So absolutely.
So the quicker we can get dollars into these things, and that comes to our design feature. We want to get as close to that IRS limit, the modified endowment contract limit,
right,
as we can. So we do that in the first 4 to 5 years. You're not forced to, there's flexibility in there, but we want to. There's a ceiling and a floor to every policy. There's a rate that we can't go over,
right,
and there's a rate we can't go under. And as long as we're in between those two numbers every year, that's how this policy works.
There's two types of people out there. There's the type of person that wants to get on the phone with you and ask 40 questions.
Yeah.
Then there's the person that doesn't want to talk to you at all and wants to find out information about this and go down a rabbit hole that's not you two.
Yep.
You are an expert, and like to people that are listening out here, like, this guy's amazing. He knows what he's doing. I trust him. So if someone wanted to get information and go down a rabbit hole without talking to Mike, where would they go?
I would start at the unlimitedwealth.com.
Okay, unlimitedwealth.com.
Unlimitedwealth.com. Go there. There's a quick video that we put together. It's a 5-minute video. Gives kind of an overview, 30,000-foot view. Then if you want to get in the weeds, there's tons of articles and blogs that have been written.
For readers.
For readers. Then you've got a video series that talks case-by-case examples, all the different things. The best one I've found is this podcast. You know, I have a commute from Chelsea to Homewood every day. And you know, that's not a quick run. I'm a podcast lover. I listen to yours. I listen to many others. If you're a podcast listener, we've put together about 5 or 6 seasons now.
Save Yourself Podcast.
Save Yourself Podcast, and just listen and consume. Hear it from other people. Hear it from entrepreneurs, business owners, real estate. And Thomas Cox was on that show.
Yes, he was.
Yep.
If someone wanted to ask the questions, get on the phone. Hey, got questions. Who do they contact?
Yeah, we've got a staff. I mean, you can contact us directly.
Great.
We're open to anybody, but we do have a staff around us that helps, because there's a lot of servicing that goes along with these policies.
Oh my gosh.
My practice manager, Stacy, is amazing.
She's wonderful.
She's amazing. Yep. And so they drive the engine. They run the business behind the scenes. They're the admin. And so there's always there's different channels on our websites and through phone calls. You can get on Nalan.com, reach out to any one of us as well. NalanWealthManagement.com as well.
Last thing before we go, what would you tell someone that is interested in what we're talking about? They've heard IBC. They've heard the Dave Ramsey people say it's whole life insurance awful. They're hearing this thing about IBC and how it's changed people's lives. Mm-hmm. Last final thought before we go about IBC and at least giving it a shot. What would you say?
We all want financial freedom. We all want passive income. We all want those things. It's the how to get there. It is what is the method in which I can, whether it's real estate, whether it's your business, whether it's the market, whatever those means are getting there, all have to be funded somehow. Mm-hmm. Educate yourself on a system. And if you don't want it, you could run the infinite banking system out of a shoebox.
Sure.
Take money out, put more money when you replace it. The system works with whatever vehicle you're going to use. We have found, and we've done the research to educate ourselves, that a properly structured dividend paying whole life insurance policy is the best mechanism, is the best vehicle. Perfect. So if you educate yourself on the product, the process will come. Whatever your process is to make wealth and generate wealth, we just want to use this system, this savings vehicle, to help fund those deals.
Compounding anything
is
the eighth wonder of the world.
Yep.
Compounding finances, compounding fitness, compounding knowledge. Steps that build on top of each other is, you can't stop it.
Yeah.
Once it gets going, it's really, really difficult to stop. Yeah. So, Mike, thank you so much for joining us today.
We
got in some great just details of this thing, and I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks. Thank you for having me.